Welcome to the Gravity Podcast, where we host conversations on developing a Christian spirituality rooted in love that fosters resilient faith in everyday life. Podcast listener, you have once again found the Gravity Commons podcast. Hopefully, not by mistake. Hopefully, this was either a friend sent you this link or you just have this. This is the only podcast you listen to. However you got here, whyever you're here, we're happy that you're listening to us. By us, I mean my friends Christy and Ben, who joined me. Good day.
Good day.
Good day. Hello.
Hello. You know what? We are starting a series on anger. And this has come out of sort of some news stories that I've been watching about how anger is doing some bad work. I know this isn't a news flash for anybody, but later in the series we're going to chat about a leader of a Christian ministry who sort of came under investigation for allegations of misusing power and doing so via anger in a way that harmed somebody else. And there's complications in that story. We'll get to them later in the series. But I've also been writing on my Substack about how anger can be holy and good. And we'll probably get into this more as we go along, our own stories and journeys about reckoning with our own anger. Mm-hmm. But it did lead me to sort of think, you know, anger is a wily beast. Mm-hmm. It's an irascible mystery, and it needs to be, I think it would behoove us to tease it out a bit over a series of weeks where we talk about, you know, the cost and also the benefit of being more acquainted with our anger and anger in the world. So that's what we're doing here today. And we've got our resident doctorate of anger, the feelings doctor.
Feelings doctor.
Christy Penley, Dr. Penley. Hopefully, hey. Paul. Hopefully,
welcome
Paul
to the Gravity Commons podcast.
Yes. Okay, Christy, just by way of reset, would you give our listeners like a brief summary of the work you did on Kingdom Emotions and obviously how anger played a part in that?
Yeah, of course. So in my thesis in writing, I just saw so often, specifically in the faith world, we do not untangle emotions. We do not process. We don't know what to do with any, whether it's anger or whatever. And so I really did want to dive in, believing that anger, joy, whatever the emotion is, could be a flag that's waving itself as an opportunity to grow in greater intimacy with God. But for that to happen, we have to notice, we have to name, and we have to navigate our emotions. So we have to notice, we have to detect, be able to see them, and then call them for what they are. Be honest about what it is. And there's a lot of misconceptions about many emotions. And then we have to navigate through them and really process through them. Mm. Sometimes before we process them and navigate them, we have to regulate ourselves in not being able to just explode or for that emotion to kind of seep out in an unhealthy way. So that's what I wrote about.
There's so much there I want to like tease out, but Ben, maybe I'll let you say something at some point. Christy, one of the things that struck me about what you said is the assumption that emotions are important.
Yeah.
For many of us in Christian spaces, I think we were taught that emotions were superfluous at best, but they weren't spiritually significant.
Yeah.
You know?
A lie.
in the public square, that sort of gets weaponized as like facts don't care about your feelings. But I think that comes out of a larger cultural package that sublimates or subjugates feelings underneath like rational thought.
Yeah.
Did your research at all touch on the relationship between emotions and thinking?
Well, I mean, I had to lay the foundation that we are like an ecosystem, right? We are not just a spiritual being. We are not just a physical being. We are not just a relational being. We are also an emotional being. And we can't just ignore one whole part of who we are and think that we're going to be okay. And so just like in an ecosystem, if the algae grows a lot and we don't pay attention to it, it's going to start killing fish and it's going to start then killing birds and that type of thing. So we need to look holistically at who we are. And part of that is our emotions and our emotional being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ben, that reminds me of that anecdote we would often share about when the wolves were reintroduced to Yellowstone.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that? You remember that anecdote?
Right.
Christy, have you heard about this?
No, tell me.
Ben, do you want to?
I can try to fish it out of my memory.
Recount it?
I think, yeah. So they were, I think they were seeking to reintroduce wolves to Yellowstone. And I can't remember the ostensible reason for it. But it seemed like
a good idea. I think it was they had extra wolves.
We got too many wolves. Where are we going to put them? No. But yeah, I think it was, I honestly can't remember. But there was one reason.
I can do it.
Do you remember what the reason was?
Why?
Yeah, why did they do it? But then it caused all these like other effects that they weren't realizing that it would cause.
I think the extinction of from wolves from Yellowstone was a mistake.
Uh-huh.
And so the conservation agencies that may or may not still be funded, they wanted to reintroduce wolves to Yellowstone as like a conservation. Yeah,
let's conserve the wolves. Let's increase the population. But what they didn't realize that happened was that when they reintroduced the wolves, the whole ecosystem got healthier because there were more predators for the deer. And the deer, there were too many deer, and they were eating all of the foliage around the edges of the rivers.
I think that's why they reintroduced them.
Get rid of some of the deer?
Yes. The deer were overwhelming Yellowstone, and they simply wanted to cut down on the deer population.
Right. They had one goal, but what they realized is after they introduced the wolves, everything got better. The entire ecosystem got better because there's all these sort of knock-on effects, all these interrelated factors that they didn't realize were all connected until everything got better. And they were like, oh, I see. And that, you know, foliage around the rivers, which there was like beavers came back. There was all kinds of stuff that happened that was like healthy and good for the ecosystem that they didn't realize would happen when they just did this one thing of reintroducing the wolf.
Well, and that is true for us, right? If we grow in our emotional intelligence and are able to notice, name, and navigate our emotions, it will impact our human relationships. There just hadn't been a lot of study on, does that actually impact your relationship with the divine? And so that is what I really dove into, because I thought, certainly it has to, right? There has to be goodness for us to be more honest and be able to like really process and untangle these things.
So I have a question then. Anger then is an emotion. Am I correct in this assumption?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Good work.
Very good. Okay. Good. 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 We're on the same page. I think one of the things that I notice about my relationship with anger, and I've heard from a lot of people, is that there's a fear that anger is not paying attention to my anger, tending to it, sort of looking at it, seeing what it is. It feels like it's going to detrimentally affect my relationship with God and with other people, because I have experience of that happening, right? So I have experience of anger gets a hold of me and it causes me to, you know, I blow up at somebody, I yell at somebody. That relationship is now damaged. That person, you know, has experienced something from me that is harmful to them and hurtful to them. And I also experience then this amount of shame that causes me not to feel very close to God in that moment. And so like, I think I didn't decide to do this, but for a lot of my life, I was like, anger's a no bueno. Let's avoid that emotion. Let's stuff it. Let's repress it. Let's not ever show it because it's dangerous.
Yeah. I think a lot of people believe the premise that anger is bad. And maybe they think that about in and of itself, or they think that about whatever emotion is. But since we're talking about anger, and I would argue that anger is not good or bad; it is comfortable or uncomfortable.
Oh, right? say more with that.
Because if we moralize it and say it's good or bad, we will not dig in. We will not be compassionately curious. We will not actually be able to process it and learn from it. Anger shows passion and injustice often. Right? It's like a flag. Something happens and you're really passionate or you see injustice and so you're reacting to it. That's actually beneficial for us to pay attention to that. And so there often in anger is a need to be heard or a need for something to happen. And if we ignore that because we quote unquote think it's bad, rather than just admit this is really uncomfortable as I take a microscope and look at this anger.
Yeah.
I think that's a skill to be able to notice and name.
Well, I think people notice a lot, actually. I mean, if you get angry, Matt, what happens? What happens in your body?
I start wiping my face quickly from the top to the bottom, and I go whoop 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 whoop. What happens when I get angry? Oh man. My entire nervous system is on fire.
Okay.
Yeah. This is the reason I asked this. I remember being, I was bullied as a little kid. And one of the reasons I was bullied is because I was, quote, emotional. Mm. Like you could get me to cry in about 6 seconds.
Yeah.
Or I would snap in 6 seconds. And so part of my story is that my emotions controlled me. And I couldn't name I was angry until after anger had seized me and I had given it purview,
Sure.
So to compensate for that, because people didn't like when I yelled at them. I didn't like the way I was bullied when I cried. I learned how to manage or stuff or control or repress or deny my emotions. Which also isn't really naming them, I don't think, in the way that you're talking about, right?
Right. And to name them, you do have to first detect them. You do have to first notice them. Now, sometimes as we grow, we'd be like, oh, after the fact, we'd name it then as anger. But as we mature in our emotional intelligence, we are able to say, oh, my heart rate is going up. I'm clenching my fists. I'm clenching my jaws. When I get angry, I tend to I might curl my toes up. people sometimes puff their chest out. They start talking louder. They start breathing heavier. All of these physical things that are happening in our bodies that then the more we notice, the more we can detect them earlier before the explosion happens.
Yeah. And now a word from a sponsor.
The Gravity Podcast is sponsored by the Gravity Formation Course, a 12-month cohort-based training in practical spiritual formation, where you'll learn to notice how God is already at work in your life so you can participate more fully in the life God shares with us. It's a discipleship process that goes beyond just gaining more knowledge and trying new practices. In the Gravity Formation Course, we go below the surface of our lives so that we can notice and name our deepest desires in God's presence and to discern how God is at work in those desires to lead us towards holistic flourishing, more transformation, more life, more joy, more love. We've trained hundreds of people all over the world in this formation framework, and it has helped many people to have a sense of God at work in their lives, to learn how to be more at home in God's love. If you'd like to learn more, go to gravitycommons.com/formation.
All right, let's get back into our conversation. I think there's a certain amount of trust, though, that we have to have that it's going to be okay to just notice and name. I don't know. That for me, it took a little while for me to to realize, okay, I can, if I notice my anger and I can just name it that I am angry, mm-hmm. like that's not going to, you know what? I think I was afraid that it would be a sign of immaturity. Mm-hmm. Like if I admit that I'm afraid or if I admit that I'm angry, it shows that I'm maybe not as spiritually mature as I thought I was. And that's going to detrimentally affect my, you know, my relationship with God, because, you know, it's based on, I thought I was doing better than I am. There's mm-hmm. a little, you know what I mean? There's a little bit yeah. of like, man, I get, you know, I feel afraid a lot more than I realized I did. I feel anxious a lot more than I feel like I did. I feel angry more than I realized that I did. And that could be a hard thing to notice and name.
But if we didn't judge ourselves for the emotions that we were experiencing, and instead we just looked at them
yeah.
with compassion, I think that's where we would go, oh, there, I think this is telling me something. Yeah. I think this is pointing to something that I can pay attention to.
Yes.
I think in anger, they're often, you hear in scripture, right? People talk about just anger or unjust anger, right? I'd mm-hmm. actually think that's too churchy. I don't like it, but, okay. You know, whatever. I don't know what you're going to call it, but sometimes they say righteous and unrighteous. I don't like that either. But what I mean by that is there are times when something happens that is unjust and it's, we're angry about it. Something's mm-hmm. happening to somebody else. Someone's being treated poorly, you know, whatever the thing is. There are times when I get angry that I would say maybe are unjust, and it's because I'm tired. Mm-hmm. I'm hungry. I'm in a bad mood.
Yeah.
And so you have to pay attention, not just to the anger, but then untangle, like, is this just anger or is this unjust anger?
Mm. Yeah.
And I think that that's an important step in yeah. navigating it, to be honest about that piece of it too.
Yeah. Let me ask Ben. Ben, when I do my best to niggle you into anger, is that just or unjust? this is something that's like ongoing, kind of fun, happy friend time with Ben and I. Like Ben, you've said to me, mm-hmm. like you've experienced, like in your angry place, a lot of like bad stuff, and so you work really hard to not express anger.
Yes. Yeah. I've no, like my automatic response to anger for a long time was like, I didn't even realize I was doing it, but I would repress it very quickly. Mm. I'd feel it. Nope. We're not going to do that. Because it has been damaging, you know, in my relationships. And so I don't want to express it. I repress it. And I think that part of that was I had there was a moral story about anger that it was bad. It was bad to get angry. And so, you know, it's two reasons to repress it, among many others. You know, I think noticing and naming it, I think that's been a game changer. It's been really helpful for me. And I appreciate what you said earlier, Christy. You know, I thought it was kind of funny that you said like, oh, just don't judge yourself for it. Oh, easy. You know, like, but I think that has been key for me as well, is to realize that there are two things involved. There are two moves involved there. One is to notice the emotion with compassion, you know, like just to notice it without any other story attached to it. The right. second thing is that I tell myself a story about what this means.
Right.
And that's the thing that I can start to refrain from. I can notice the anger, but then stop when I feel myself start to tell myself a story about it, that it's bad, that it's wrong. You know, what kind of a, you know, blankety blank are you? You know, those kinds of stories that automatically run in our heads. It's like, that's the thing that I can start to interrupt and say, yeah. No, all I need to do right now is notice this. And maybe there's a different story that's available to me about this that I can listen for and discern. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and that is on both sides. Like people can tell a story about anger and go into a shame spiral.
Right.
But people can also tell a story about anger as if I am angry, so I can say whatever I want. Yep. I can do whatever I want.
I'm justified. And yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
and yeah. I just want to be real clear that anger isn't meant for attacking people. Mm. So just because you feel angry does not give you the license to raise your voice, to name call, to say hurtful things, to be physical with somebody. Like, we need to make a commitment to never dehumanize another person by attacking them with our words and our actions in our anger.
Yeah.
And that's a story that I think a lot of people believe in relationship and online, to be honest.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting, Christy. So there's the story is either anger is bad, you can't feel it, stop it. Or the story can be anger justifies whatever happens next.
That's right.
You know,
yep.
Like, and so, you know, I think, and because those things happen so quickly for a lot of us, yeah. I think that I think that's pretty universal, that sense of self-justification that mm-hmm. anger gives us, that now I can do whatever. That's maybe the reason that it's been so easy to moralize anger, because those they feel like the same thing. Is right. Like yelling and feeling angry feel like, well, that's just the same thing.
Right.
But to be able to separate those things and say, no, yelling and, you know, name calling, well, that is wrong. Feeling anger that sort of totally moved me towards that. That's okay. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, when our kids were little, we had like a little line that we said to our kids, and it was, you can be mad, mm-hmm. but you can't be mean. Because really I wanted my kids like, feel what you're going to feel. Like, yeah. It's okay to feel that, but you don't get to push your brother. You don't get mm-hmm. to say something mean. You don't get to whatever. And to be able to separate those things of, you can be mad, but you can't be mean.
Yeah.
Yes. So many things here. First of all, I don't appreciate you telling me I can't judge people in anger. I don't know who I'd be if I couldn't feel morally superior. Okay. So one of the things I discovered about my anger was that it was a, and obviously this, like, listener, you'll understand that this kind of came through therapy, that my anger was a protector. Mm-hmm. And it was when I felt threatened or like I was in a dangerous situation, anger is what I used to push back against the threat and also to protect myself from harm. But most often I would inflict harm as I was protecting myself from harm. Mm-hmm. So part of my story and part of my growing ability to do these things you're talking about, Christy, is I didn't have to just like manage my anger, but I actually had to deal with that part of me that thought anger was a good idea for protection.
Yeah.
You know, I actually had to not just name and notice anger with compassion, but underneath that was like, you know, to use a metaphor, or an image, was like a scared little boy,
yeah,
who was recruiting emotions in my body to protect himself.
Yeah. Well, what I hear you saying is it's like an iceberg, and you saw the anger,
yeah,
you know, in what was going on, but underneath the surface, there was this little boy who was scared, who needed to be heard, who needed to be protected, who needed to, like,
yeah.
That type of thing.
Yeah. And I think it was, I was reading, this is almost 20 years ago now, I was reading a book by Franciscan priest Richard Rohr, and he wrote a book called From Wild Man to Wise Man. This is out of the like men's movement stuff he did decades ago. He was a chaplain in a prison, yeah. And he met with imprisoned guys. And it was kind of a throwaway line in that book, but I remember it. And the line was, most angry men are hurting men.
Yeah.
Yes.
And when I read that, it like stopped me short. And I began to like, I knew it was about me. I just didn't know, you know, how deep the iceberg went, but I knew that was for me. I share that to say, like, I think anger has cultural meaning and significance different for men than it does for women.
Yeah.
And I wonder, Christy, if you could share like from your perspective, speaking for all women, Christy, if you could share from your perspective how you see that, how would you would name the difference of how anger is scripted for men and women?
Yeah. Well, especially in our culture, right? It is socially acceptable more often than not for men to be angry and express their anger than for women. If men express their anger, they're just being a man. If a woman expresses, passionate. Yeah, yeah. If a woman expresses her anger, you know, she's being a bitch.
We all know the word. Yep.
Yes. Sorry, I just said it. Hope your kids aren't listening to this podcast. But you know, like, it's just seen differently.
Yeah.
And same with, like, you know, somehow socially acceptable for women to cry more than men in our society. Is that actually true? No, but it's like what our society has put on these emotions.
Yeah.
I think that's true.
Yeah. And sure. So I think it then goes beyond just what our society says, but then there are like these rules then we start to believe and live into. And that's where I think we then push down a lot of different emotions because of whatever the sex we are.
Yeah. You mentioned, you know, that we need to dig into our anger. And then you mentioned this phrase, as I've talked with you about this, is the anger sound anger or unsound anger? Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, just like kind of what I was saying before of there's sound anger, you know, a kid gets abused and I have to call DHS and I'm angry. I'm angry about the situation. I'm angry about like, because there's an injustice happening. Mm-hmm. I would say that's sound anger.
Yeah.
Now yesterday I, was just irritated. I was not in the greatest mood. I skipped lunch. So it's like now 3:30 and I haven't eaten because I don't eat breakfast. And I was like, I'm hungry and I'm tired. And we were watching a friend's baby and I was up like at 11, 12, 1, 2, 3. The poor little girl didn't sleep that night. And so I was like, I was lack of sleep, hungry, like all of these things. And then I just snapped at my kid. Mm. Well, I would say that's unsound anger. Because there really isn't an injustice there. It's just me and my humanity, like, being ticked off. Does that make sense? So I think we have to differentiate between the two.
Yeah. So, I mean, you were saying before that you don't like the word righteous and unrighteous, but that's, I think you're advocating for this sound versus unsound.
Yeah. I think maybe that's a better word.
Yeah. I'm struck by, Christy, how the difference that you're naming where there's an injustice that's happened versus the injustice is that you have irritated me where it's like, okay, well, that's not a real injustice. Right.
Right.
I think there's then the work that we have to do in noticing and naming our anger is really understanding what the source of it is and what we're really angry about.
Yeah.
Right. Because there can be, like you were saying, Matt, like there's this little boy or this little girl, you know, and that happens to a lot of us where there's these old stories of real injustice, but they get brought into the present moment, you know, where it's like, you know, maybe the injustice was something that, you know, the bullies did to me. But now my kid is talking to me and they're angry with me and I get irritated and angry with them because what that triggers in me is this, you know, the little kid who got bullied, but that situation is not this situation. Right. And so I, like, there's a lot of untangling we have to do, right? The stories that we tell about our anger to say like, okay, why do I feel irritated when my child talks to me in this way? You know what I mean? Yeah. And how is that, you know, how is this story different from the story that's maybe coming online in my body?
Right. And I would say like that we don't know that sometimes right away. Sometimes we are so full of anger. There is like our bodies are experiencing it so much that we do have to regulate before we can actually navigate it. Mm-hmm. We do have to express it. I use an example when I speak about this of like a Coke bottle, right? And I bring like a little Coke bottle up there and I shake it up and I talk about how, you know, let's say you are at work and you have a bad meeting and then you get in your car and traffic is bad and then you get a phone call and, you know, whatever. Like all of these things happen and you get home and the kitchen is a mess and your kids are naughty and you just explode. And it's like I shake up the Coke bottle and I kind of tell the story and then we just think, well, I just have to like open up the Coke bottle and all my anger goes everywhere and it spills everywhere and makes this big mess. Mm-hmm. But the reality is we have to learn how to regulate ourselves. Like all of those things might happen. You might have a terrible day and all those things, you know, you go through the same thing, but how do you regulate it? It's like you open up that little Coke bottle. So it's like, mm-hmm. you know, release the pressure, release the pressure, so that then you can actually navigate it and figure out, is this sound or unsound? Mm-hmm. And in ways that we would express anger in healthy ways. I mean, are like go for an exercise, go for a run, hit a pillow, you know, go for a walk, move your body, journal, chop wood. Like all of those things are ways to be able to like mm-hmm. get it out mm-hmm. so that we can actually untangle it.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
Let's get back to the show. This this conversation about sound and unsound anger, one piece of that discernment, I don't think it's like a hard and fast rule, but one piece that I found helpful is from the book, The Politics of Jesus by Aubrey Hendricks. Hmm. And he talks about, in that book, he talks about the seven political strategies of Jesus. And number five is save your anger for the mistreatment of others. And I realize a lot of my unsound anger comes when I'm personally offended. The car in front of me is sitting at the roundabout and has room to go, but just doesn't go. Mm-hmm. And we're just sitting there.
Yeah.
You know, or my son doesn't give me the kind of attention and warmth and affection that I want.
Yeah.
So those are the like little micro irritations that I feel. And they usually are about myself feeling slighted or thwarted or disrespected. Yeah. Now, sometimes that can be sound anger, but most often I'm reacting in my body with like taking personal umbrage or offense, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah. And Aubrey talks about in this chapter, he uses the passage from Mark 1, Jesus's first healing, where a leper comes to him and begs him and says, if you will, you can make me clean. And Jesus says, I do will be clean. And immediately the leprosy left him. I'm now reading from the scriptures. Or listener, if you want to believe that I'm doing this from memory, please go ahead. And he was made clean. And then most translations say, and moved with compassion, he sent him away at once and said, see that you say nothing to anyone. Mm-hmm. But early manuscripts have a different word than compassion. Early manuscripts have, and snorting with anger.
Right.
And like Bruce Metzger, who's one of the like foremost Greek textual critics in, you know, the last 50 years, says that it's most likely that the original text was snorting with anger,
yeah.
but the copyists just didn't.
They didn't like that.
They didn't like it.
No.
But Aubrey Hendricks goes on to point out that Jesus's anger in the Gospels is resorted for the reserved for the mistreatment of other people.
Yeah.
And I think that's helped me so much, like to understand even God's anger as God's love opposing injustice.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, yeah. And you see Jesus's, I mean, in the Gospels, Jesus gets angry like 15 times, right? There's different, like 15 different times in the Gospels you can read about it. One of them that stands out a lot that people know about is when he goes in and cleans out the temple.
Yes.
Right? And people are like thinking he's like Indiana Jones with a leather whip. Mm-hmm. The reality is he's probably just has like a stick, like a bundle of sticks that shepherd boys and girls would like hush the animals and like kind of move them around, right?
Yeah.
He's not whipping people. He's not hurting people, like all of that. But he is angry. And he's angry. And I think his anger shows and reveals a belief and a value that he has. because I think that's what anger does. It shows what we believe is important. And Jesus was angry about people getting ripped off who were seeking to honor God. And he believed, hey, you shouldn't financially rip anybody off or take advantage of the lower middle class people by playing on their like spiritual devotion, like going to the temple and wanting to engage, right? And so his anger was pointed towards the injustice of other people and what was going on.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's important to see that and to pay attention to that type of thing.
Yeah, because it's a fundamentally, you know, even though in our bodies it feels the same, like the emotion is the same when somebody is being exploited and I'm angry about it, or somebody's being hurt, you know, there's an injustice happening. But I have the same emotion when, you know, somebody doesn't go at the roundabout.
Yeah.
And so there is this, like, you have to ask yourself, what am I mad about here? You know, and, you know, I'm struck. I remember, I think it was in The Divine Conspiracy, Dallas Willard was talking about anger. And he mentioned that, like, it is a thwarting of our will. But one of the ways to help us with that unsound anger is just to say, there's no good reason that I should have what I want necessarily. You know, like, you know, what am I going to get home like 3 seconds earlier if this person doesn't go? Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's a, anyway, I find it helpful to sort of rehearse some of those stories about like, oh, what am I mad about here? You know, I'm mad that this person didn't, you know, talk to me in a pleasant way, you know, that the person serving me at the table didn't, you know, I don't know, like, what am I really mad about? And is there any good reason for me to sort of have what I want in this situation? Or, you know, can I save my anger for situations that are really like, oh, this is really unjust.
Yeah.
You know, this is really, you know, not God's will here.
Can I caveat this too? Because I did say most, and it's like a helpful filter, but there are times when something's happening to me that is wrong and unjust, and it's okay to be angry about it.
For sure. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So listener, a lot of times people are shamed for feeling angry when wrongdoing is done to them. Mm-hmm. And please don't hear us saying that, implying that, or encouraging that.
Yes.
Sometimes the reason why that little boy in me reacting in disproportionate anger at my 16-year-old not wanting to give me a hug is a problem is because I actually need that anger for things that really are a problem. Mm-hmm. It just is overfunctioning.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So anger actually is important because it signals that something's not right.
Yeah.
And often that tells us the truth.
Yeah. It's like a smoke detector. What's it telling you?
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Right. Yeah. So I just want to say that. And I think this conversation highlights the reason why we want to do this series. Mm-hmm. You know, I think all of us are coming at anger or to anger from a different place, meaning we all have work to do with our anger, and that's not all the same.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, some of us need to get in touch with our anger. Mm-hmm. Some of us need to get a little distance from our anger. Yeah. Some of us need to learn how to be angry. Some of us need to figure out a way to resolve our anger without inflicting on others. Some of us need to learn how to discern between like sound and unsound anger. And so that's one of the reasons why we want to convene this conversation. In subsequent weeks, we're going to talk about some of the helpful work that anger does. Yeah. Not only in, as Christy mentioned, the scriptures with Jesus, but also in the work of opposing injustice in our world.
Yeah.
And then we're going to talk about the unhelpful or unsound work anger can do, especially as it relates to ministry leaders who often don't realize the work their anger does with people around them.
Yeah.
This is part of my story. I've shared a little bits and pieces of it. But we'll get into that, hopefully do some interviews. And then maybe come out the other side of this podcast sinless and perfect. No, come out of this podcast with a better lexicon, a deeper appreciation for the varieties of anger and how to navigate them in our life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That sound good?
Sounds good. Sounds Let's do it.
Before we go, I just want to point out that this practice of learning to notice and name and navigate is fundamental work we do in the Gravity Formation course.
Yep.
So if you're listening and you're like, boy, that'd be nice. Or, you know, I wish I could do that, or I want to get better at that. Consider going through the Gravity Formation course.
Yeah.
It gives you the tools from the ground up on how to be more present and have better agency over your body, because that's where you meet Christ.
That's right.
Right in your body.
Yeah.
And so, Christy, I know you are pulling together a cohort right now, and I've got several people who are interested. We have several more spots for that. So if that sounds like something that you're interested in, just reach out to me, matt@gravitycommons.com, and I'll have a conversation with you to see if it's right, if this is the right time, and we can go from there. All right. Well.
Awesome. Sounds great.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Good. Good chat, everybody.
Way to go. Yeah, I'm excited about the series. I think this is this will be a helpful series for me and for a lot of our listeners. So,
yeah.
All right, next time. Peace.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Podcast. If you're finding it helpful, please tell your friends about it. Word of mouth is the best advertising. Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. To join discussions about the podcast and lots more, join us in the Gravity community. It's free to join, and you can connect with other listeners to the podcast to talk about faith, spirituality, and whatever else comes up. Also, Ben and I hang out there a lot. To join, go to gravitycommons.com/community. The Gravity Podcast is produced by Ben Sternke and Matt Tebbe. Aaron Sternke edits and mixes the podcast. You can check out his mixing, engineering, and production work at aaronsternke.com. And we'd love to hear from you. To record a question or comment for us, go to gravitycommons.com/message and click the Start Recording button. You can also email us at podcast@gravitycommons.com. Catch you next time.
Save big on everything you need when you shop at Menards. Spidey Electric smart home products make everyday living simply smarter. Stay connected to home while you're away with wireless outdoor security cameras. Control all your smart home products from anywhere using one easy-to-use app. View our entire selection of Spidey Electric smart home products today on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for other great deals happening this week. Save